It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law here on the Talk Station, the right advice at the right time, and Cecil Harvell, Wes Collins with us. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben.
I hope everyone is well.
We are.
Okay. Doing great.
Now, we've been talking about petition to partition, and I don't think we made it through all of that.
Well, Ben, we have. The last few weeks we've been talking about, you know, ownership in real property. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's awfully nice if we own 100% of our little
yeah.
piece of heaven.
Right.
But, you know, that's not life,
yeah.
okay? To frame this conversation back up again, you know, you have people who enter into property arrangements as business partners.
Mm-hmm.
And then for whatever reason, maybe the business partnership dissolves. Maybe there's a death of the business partner.
Mm-hmm.
You have folks who get married and own property, and then they get divorced, and they now own the property, tenants in common.
Mm-hmm.
And for sure, a very common origin of tenants in common ownership is when clients inherit their property from their mother or father or grandmother, and they leave it equally to the three grandchildren or equally to the three or four children,
mm-hmm.
okay? And so, therefore, all of a sudden now, here we are owning property with another.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, many times folks are able to agree exactly what to do,
mm-hmm.
to list the property and sell it. Sometimes one of the children will come forward and have it, well, the children would have it appraised, and one child will buy out the others,
mm-hmm.
and things go very well. Those are certainly common scenarios. But, of course, then there's the other side of the coin,
right.
where they cannot agree. And only one is taking full responsibility for the property. One is paying the taxes. One is doing the grass mowing, if
mm-hmm.
you will. Okay? And so as a result of this, Wes and I then get the call and then have the office conference with this tenants in common owner who is asking the question, what in the world do I do? I only own a third of this property, but I'm taking all of the responsibility for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to have some resolution on this.
Okay. All right. And Wes, that means sometimes you get called in for litigation there too, right?
Yeah, of course, at Harvell & Collins, I'm the main litigator, so
mm-hmm.
this is a form of litigation. You know, most of the cases I deal with are more of a plaintiff-defendant type case where you deal with the case either in federal court or it's in superior court, which is highest trial-level court, sometimes district court, which
mm-hmm.
is one level down. This is somewhat of a hybrid, though, because, you know, there's really not plaintiff and defendant. There's more of petitioners and respondent. And usually, excuse me, usually the person who's the petitioner is this one person that Cecil was just referring to who's, you know, the one who's maybe carrying the freight
mm-hmm.
and is not happy with the other co-owners because they're not contributing to, you know, the ownership of the property and the maintenance of the property, insurance, taxes, you know, those kind of things. That's a lot of times how
yeah.
we get to this point.
Yeah. I would imagine sometimes that even stems from maybe a family arrangement. Well, I'll live there and I'll take care of everything, and then it gets kind of tiring.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is true, Ben. These files sometimes have been around for a while.
Yes.
In other words, there has been this tenants in common ownership for a long time. You know, people call it heir property.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have about three or four of these in my office right now where the clients have come in and said, you know, Mr. Harvell, this is heir property. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I always find that a little, they're not, of course, saying A-I-R.
Right,
and then,
right.
of course, as an heir of an estate. But they've owned it, you know, as a family, you know,
mm-hmm.
for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And now all of a sudden, you know, there needs to be resolution. Maybe one of the heirs has, since they have owned it for a while, has now died.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And now there are even more heirs.
Right. Right.
That have ownership in yeah. the property.
Yeah.
And so here we are now trying to seek some resolution. Now, one of the other things, and I know I'm speaking so general today, but I just think these kind of things, you know, we're here to demystify as we talk about. And I hope our listeners, you know, are it's nice to understand the context from which these things begin. You know, we've talked also on the program, Ben, about how the law encourages the highest and best use of a property. And this is just not the highest and best use, my friend, when, you know, six, seven, eight people are owning a piece of property,
right,
can't agree on things, and only one is paying the taxes. You know, you don't have clear title to the property necessarily. And so,
I mean, you could sell your portion, but like you said, who wants
it? You sell your portion, but who do you sell it to? Because you don't own all of it, okay? And this is not what our law, you know, our jurisprudence, if you will, encourages. It encourages, on the other hand, that there be a clear title, that there be a clearing of the title, that there be solidification with regard to the ownership of this property. And so clearly there is a procedure whereby we can go to court and go to the clerk of court, actually, and begin the process of petitioning out our part of the property, which in effect means that we are now going to force there to be some action on this property.
Well, and Wes, as you said, this is this petition to partition is not a typical kind of court action in that that its venue is different, too, just being in the clerk of court's office.
Right. It's, you know, before the clerk of court, you know, anyone who has any interest in the property has to be given notice, have to be served the petition so that they can come forward and, you know, speak their piece, raise whatever issues they want to with regard to the property. A couple other elements of this that I think listeners should understand is that in North Carolina, when we proceed with the petition to partition, it's all driven by a particular statute that's on point. You know, you contrast that with like a negligence case, a car accident case. Well, there's not a statute that says negligence, and this is the way you deal with it.
And this is exactly what it is.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, negligence is, you know, is developed through years and years of case law, and that's just, you know, a very large area of the law that's dealt with differently, depending on the circumstances. A petition to partition is very much defined under our North Carolina general statutes in one section, you know, called partitioning. And when we proceed through that, it does make the clerks. Excuse me, I got a little bit of a cough this morning, but it does make the clerk's job a little easier, you know, when you have just that kind of playbook there to go by with regard to the statute.
Well, let me ask you: does the petitioner have to show that they made every effort to try to resolve this?
No, not at all. But you bring up a great point. In our statute, there's a right to request mediation. So any party, and I put off the top of my head, I think it's within your response of pleading, so you have to do it. If you don't do it immediately, then you waive that right. You can request court-ordered mediation. So the clerk then considers that at a hearing and then either enters an order requiring the parties to mediate, meaning come together and try to resolve their issues, or not. Depending on, you know, the circumstances. But usually the clerk of court is going to order mediation because the clerk is going to want, you know, the parties to at least make a good faith effort to resolve whatever issues they have. And maybe they haven't been able to sit down and discuss these things before.
Maybe, or been willing to.
Right. Maybe the personalities just don't allow that. But when the court order, you know, the court by order requires you to mediate, you have to participate in good faith in that mediation. You have to be there. You have to listen. You have to stay until the mediator tells you can leave. You know, it doesn't mean that the case is going to get settled, but a lot of times, you know, these petition to partition cases do get settled when the parties just finally get to the venue where they could sit down and have a reasonable discussion and have a, you know, a skilled mediator, an attorney who understands the ins and outs of the petition to partition process, explain it, you know, to them in an unbiased and unpartial way. So
the results of mediation can be what? They can be
right.
That the parties can agree on how they're going to either divide the property or own the property.
Right.
But can it actually settle can it divide the property as well in mediation?
Absolutely. I mean, I've had petition to partition mediations where, you know, we've got a map, you know, on the paper, and we're drawing lines with a pencil, you know, doing the best we can. Of course, a surveyor is going to have to complete it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have been involved in these kind of mediations where we're, in fact, drawing lines. I've been involved in these mediations where we come to an agreement that, okay, finally we'll list the property with this realtor. The commission won't be more than this. The proceeds will be split in this way. However, Sally or Jane or Bob or Bill or whoever is paid the first $10,415 to compensate them for all this they put into the property.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the world is your oyster, you know, with regard to how you settle a case at mediation.
Yeah, everything's negotiable.
Do it any way you want to.
Because I would imagine there are, because every piece of property is unique, you've got some very interesting kinds of divisions that could happen there, too. I'm thinking of a neighboring property of mine. I think it's owned by a lot of children. And if it were divided, it has waterfront there, but it's a long way back to the highway. And as you see, you'd have very narrow little lots if you're trying to divide that.
Some of the complicating factors are certainly, you know, waterfront, water access, road frontage if it's a commercial property, access to other adjoining properties we may own. You know, so as you say, every property is unique. So, again, there could be, you know, tons of issues that come up that come into consideration when we're trying to divide the property out.
Exactly. We'll have more to come in just a moment here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. And if you would like to call in, you can call in with these numbers.
800-818-2255, 247-7282, and 353-4674.
Hey, welcome back here on a Coastal Daybreak on the Talk Station. Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. We're talking about the petition to partition. How do you divide property sometimes when the owners can't agree on how it should be owned?
Yeah, we were talking during the break about, you know, how time is not really our friend with regard to division of property, and folks dying and passing on their interests to their heirs, you know, whether by will or through intestacy. And, you know, if we have two or three or four, you know, siblings, for example, who own property, that's one thing. But then when one of them passes away, another one passes away, and they have children, their interest goes down to the children. All of a sudden, we have, you know, 20 co-owners or 25 co-owners as, you know, the years have gone by. Then it becomes much more difficult to petition.
Within that, you have divorces, and then you have children that were from first marriages and all kinds of folks.
Have all kind of folks, and if you have a minor who has an ownership interest in the property because of, you know, an inheritance, then in order to deal with that minor's interest in a petition to partition, you have to file a petition for appointment of a guardian as well for each one.
Yeah.
And then a guardian has to be appointed to accept service for that individual. I mean, it's like you have a mini lawsuit within a lawsuit for each minor. So is the further we go down the road with regard to that, the less likely it is that we'll ever salvage whatever property value we have in the property. You know, for example, if you, as I mentioned during the break, if we, you know, had a $200,000 piece of property owned by, you know, 25 or 30 people, and maybe one or two of them want to petition a partition, well, after the attorney has gotten everyone served, you know, and we've gone through, because it's going to be more expensive with more parties.
Yes.
Because it's just the service, getting everyone served alone, probably you're not going to be able to get everyone served personally, so you're going to have to spend some money on service by publication, putting it in the newspaper, wherever this person or persons may be. So, again, you have a couple hundred thousand dollar piece of property and divide it up that many ways. Well, it's probably not even worth it.
Right.
So, but if we take care of that at a point where the property is, you know, four, six, you know, not owned more by more people than that,
right,
then we actually can salvage the value that we have in the property.
And yeah,
and again, that gets worse and worse and worse. You know, those 25 or 30 are going to become 35 and 40, and then all of a sudden it's just split so many different ways that it'd be impossible to really convey title.
You still have the caveat that is the state's is in the interest to try to divide that property if possible, right?
Right.
So,
and Ben, I think we need to get to some semblance of finality here in terms of the bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, eventually, what is going to happen? Mm-hmm. If there is not this settlement, as you all have just now been discussing, is that there are going to be two options. Number one is that the property is going to go on the public market for sale,
mm-hmm.
to see whether or not a realtor can list the property and find a buyer. And then that buyer will, that contract, if we can get one, a buyer,
mm-hmm.
will be approved by the court. And the property will be sold by the commissioners, mm-hmm. at that point, and those monies will then be divided pro rata amongst the undivided interest holders.
Right.
That's called a private sale.
That is called a private sale.
Right, right, right.
The other option is, Wes, you tell the other.
Well, the other option
The other sense judicial. Of finality.
Well, it's a public sale.
A public sale, yes.
The clerk has two options. Private sale, which, you know, you try to list it, mm-hmm. you know, to get the best you can. Public sale, you go ahead and move the property now by having what really amounts to a foreclosure sale on the mm-hmm. courthouse steps. Commissioner goes and takes bids, and then there's a period of time.
Upset
bid period, 10-day upset bid period. It actually applies for private and public.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, typically on a private sale type situation, if you're listing the property for sale and you get an offer and the commissioners accept that offer, you're probably not going to get an upset bid within 10 days because it's been exposed to the market for a while anyway.
Right, right.
The public sale procedure, you know, you're going to go ahead and get that highest number mm-hmm. pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, where we get to eventually on the sale. That's for property that can't be divided in kind, can't be actually split up like farmland or something with little acreage.
Sure. Yeah. When we come back from the break, let's talk a little bit about how to avoid getting to these points.
Yeah,
perhaps,
great.
And make that our bottom line here, too. On Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law, you can contact them at harvellandcollins.com. The law is increasingly complex, and the growing staff of Harvell & Collins stands ready to untangle your legal challenges. Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins, along with associates Russell Alexander and Andrew Foster, practicing in all areas of civil practice, including estate planning, elder law and asset protection, representation of the elderly, collections and foreclosures, corporate and business, and also civil trial practice in these and all other civil matters. Call to arrange your free initial consultation at 252-726-905. Plus, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins answer your questions live each Tuesday morning at 7:30 on Let's Talk Legal. Tune in to Coastal Daybreak Tuesday mornings at 7:30 on the talk station and call in with your legal questions.
I had a property issue in the sense that I've got some pretty tall pine trees, and they're inside my fenced area, but my neighbor wants to cut down the trees, concerned that trees are going to fall over and damage a building that he's built. Can he do that?
If it's your question, it's important to Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law, 1107 Bridges Street in Moorhead City. Hey, welcome back here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law, available for you to make an appointment, too, at 252-726-9050, and we're talking about the petition to partition. So how do we keep from getting in this mess?
Just like every lawsuit, talk.
Yeah, communicate.
Try to work it out. You know, if the parties can come together and come to an agreement and be reasonable with one another. I can tell you, Ben, a lot of times we end up in a partition proceeding because one party is naming their price way too high.
Right. Yeah.
They're just saying, you know, tax value says it's $30,000 and I know that's low, so I want $50,000 for
right.
my interest.
Well, right.
I mean, let's agree to get an appraisal.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever the appraised amount is, we'll buy you out, and that's what it is. Let's all agree on who this appraiser is,
mm-hmm.
and live with this person's opinion.
Now,
there's value in the finality.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
There's value in the finality.
Yeah.
One has to go into this with understanding kind of what I said, I think maybe the first or second sentence of the program today. We don't own it all, Ben.
Mm-hmm.
We don't. We're not in a situation where we have 100% title. If you're in a situation where you own the 100% title, your home,
mm-hmm.
you know, things of that nature, which of course many people do, then now we have complete control. And if we don't want to accept but a price of $50,000 when the tax value is $30,000, then that's our prerogative.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we own the whole. These circumstances are different. We are in a situation where we are owning a portion with other folks, and that changes our that changes the circumstances, does it not?
Yes.
There are even, believe it or not, the Internal Revenue Service, if you will, recognizes that the circumstances are very different when one is a minority interest holder,
mm-hmm.
and values the property, I might add, at a lower value.
Right.
Because you do not own the whole.
Mm-hmm.
You only own a portion. Even the Internal Revenue Service recognizes this. It's nice when we can cite them as an authority, isn't it, Ben?
Especially a positive one.
Yeah.
Now, what about on the estate planning side, though? I mean, if you're the original right. owner of the property, can you make some arrangements that can help avoid that kind of thing?
Well, you can. You can dictate in your will that the property be sold.
Or put it in an LLC.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You can absolutely demand in your will, dictate, if you will, specifically, bequeath that your property be sold by the executor so mm-hmm. as to get around having a tenants in common interest. There are clients who tell us this. They say, look, my children will just never agree. such as the executor, they must sell it. You need to put those kinds of provisions in the will that it has to be sold.
There's certain wisdom in that, isn't there? I mean, because you know your kids.
Right.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Or you can also pass the property into a limited liability company
mm-hmm.
with some provisions about how the property is to be used, and that's going to strip the eventual owners of the property, the children in this scenario, from the right to petition to partition, because they don't have a tenants in common interest anymore. They have a membership interest in
right.
the LLC. So that does work in some situations. I've dealt with that in many different situations with the, you know, the family beach house down here in Carteret County.
Exactly. Yeah.
Or even the farmland, you know, that's been in the family for
mm-hmm.
years. So, you know, that does work sometimes. You normally don't do that with the $200,000 or $300,000 home place.
Mm-hmm.
That more, if you want to avoid that petition to partition scenario between the kids, then great way to deal with that is just as Cecil just indicated. Don't let it pass to them, but indicate in your will that property shall be sold and the proceeds split according to your wishes, whatever they may be in
there
your
you
document.
Yeah. And if one of them wants to buy it, you know, they can still do that.
Right of first refusal.
There you go.
Absolutely. Let them exercise that if they want to during a short period of time. I can't go on forever.
Sure. Again, if you want to find out more, contact HarbellandCollins.com. Also at 252-726-9050. You'll find them at 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City.